Welcome to the Art Talk podcast, where I tell the stories of art, artists, and interview people in the arts. I am Karin Merks, your host, and I am an artist, art historian, teacher, and mentor. This is episode 86 of Art Talk, and today I have a very special guest, Jessica Agudelo. Do I pronounce that right?
Yes, Agudelo, that's fine.
Jessica is a psychologist specialized in mental health. She has a wealth of experience and is an exceptional trainer. And I know, because we met at a training at UK Black Pride, and after that I have been in one of her workshops. And she is a great listener. She currently has a program, Building the Power of Us, which we also will discuss in our conversation. Welcome, Jessica. Really happy to have you in Art Talk.
Thank you, Karin. It's so good to see you. Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So, mental health. It seems to be at the front center of everyone's attention these days. But there is a huge distinction between your mental health when you walk against a wall or something because of stress and mental illness, right? Could you briefly explain what the difference is and why it is important to be aware of that?
So mental health, we all have it. And I think we need to start from that specific point. We all have mental health just like we have physical health. Okay. Traditionally, we've viewed the terminology around mental health has been riddled and, you know, with stigma, very negative stigma. So people don't talk about it, or people go, oh, mental health, no, it's for somebody else, it's people over there. But actually, mental health, we all have it, just like we have physical health. And so when we're mentally well, when we feel good about ourselves, when our well-being is good, okay, and well-being is all about how we feel about ourselves, how comfortable we are with what we're doing, with our relationships, with our sense of purpose. When we're in a good space, that's when we have mental health. And life will throw things at us, different experiences, life events, and even trauma. And so if we have positive mental health, we are going to have more skills, more coping strategies, and more supports that we can enlist to help us manage and deal with those everyday life stresses or situations or trauma that may come our way. Now, if we look at mental health as a spectrum or a continuum, our mental health is very fluid. So we can move along that continuum or that line into experiencing poor mental health. And that's when things will happen, situations, a relationship breakdown, for example, or maybe I've lost my job, or maybe I'm struggling with my finances, or maybe I've got a physical health condition that is impacting my quality of life. So that's going to start to have a negative impact on my mental health, and I can say that I'm experiencing poor mental health. And poor mental health comes with a range of symptoms that can be unpleasant, symptoms like, you know, lack of sleep, or perhaps constant preoccupation about, you know, all those things we are anxious about. It can affect us physically as well. So we begin to experience symptoms like regular migraines, for example, or, you know, an upset tummy. And we just don't know where that's coming from. So there's lots of different symptoms that we may experience when we have poor mental health. And at this point, I'm not talking about mental illness. All of us will experience poor mental health. I guarantee it. Okay. And so those symptoms are not necessarily long lasting and probably not as severe to have such a negative impact on our day to day. We can still function. We can still go to work. We can still pick up the kids from school. We can still do all the things that we need to do, but we don't feel well. Okay. And so if we then move along that continuum, what we then have is, for people that are experiencing poor mental health for prolonged periods of time, they're not resting, they're not being supported, they're not accessing the right supports, What we're doing here is we're increasing the risk of developing mental ill health. Mm. Now, some people develop mental ill health what feels like quite suddenly and quite quickly, and there might be something to do with their biochemistry, with their neurotransmitters in the brain perhaps not working for them, or maybe there's a genetic predisposition, or maybe there are other things that they may have encountered in their lifetime, like trauma, that will exacerbate or increase that risk for them. And so with mental illness, what we have is people is starting to experience symptoms that affect you emotionally, physically, and in terms of your behavior. They're more severe, they're more long-lasting, and they begin to interfere significantly with your day-to-day functioning, mm-hmm. and your relationships and your work. It starts to make life very difficult.
Yeah.
So those, I would say, is when you look at that spectrum, you need to be very clear that there are a range of experiences through that spectrum, and we all move along that. Some of us may never experience mental ill health, but definitely poor mental health. But we are all at risk in some way. And similarly, we can all do things to promote good mental health so it can prevent us from, hopefully, from moving along that continuum.
Yeah. Wow. That is very clear. And I love the way you say it's, we all experience this in, in spectra, but also mm-hmm. how this can evolve when you don't get the right help, when you don't get, do not take care of yourself the right way. Yeah. Very clear. Thank you. And another term I wanted to ask you, what I frequently hear is neurodivergent. That is, it's almost like a trend or something, because I hear it everywhere. And I see that a lot of artists say they are, but it gets mixed up somehow. Is this also a form of mental health, or is this something else? Because I always see, as if it is, well, you said before, mental health is often get mixed up in a lot of things. This too.
Yeah, so there are two different things. Those are two very different things, but there's a very strong overlap. So, you know, I've explained what mental illness is, and neurodiversity has to do with brain function mm-hmm. and behavioral traits, okay? So those who are neurodivergent experience and interact with the world very differently or in different ways. There is no right or wrong way, by the way. But certainly, you know, when we look at systems and organizational systems, institutions, education, they have been developed or they have evolved to follow one particular way, probably the majority. So what we have is a population of neurodivergent, you know, people who are a minority, okay? And for many, many years, centuries, probably, there's been no understanding and no awareness about neurodiversity at all. So what we then have is a lot of people with particular behavioral traits or ways in which they see the world and engage with the world differently, who have really struggled to navigate through these structures and the world as it is. And so when we think about mental health, and if you're constantly coming, you know, across lots of struggles, discrimination, difficulties, that's going to increase your risk of developing mental ill health. So what we do know is that a lot of people who are neurodivergent are also at higher risk of developing mental ill health, not because, you know, there's something particular about a person who's neurodiverse and mental illness. It's more around the experiences in the world. Yeah. That is so difficult for a lot of people, will increase levels of stress. And what does stress do? If stress increases your risk of developing mental ill health. So it's not a trend, I would say. I think that there's more awareness. People are talking about it, talking about their own lived experiences, more parents being aware and asking questions, you know, especially within the education system, considering whether, you know, and requesting their children to go through an assessment for neurodiversity more and more now. because they want some answers, because they want to know how they can support their children, for example. And I've come across so many adults who are now going for assessments, you know, as their choice. You know, it's their choice to go through those assessments because they've always felt that there's been something very different about them that doesn't quite perhaps connect with the way that the world is structured at the moment. So again, neurodiversity, two different things, but there's an overlap around vulnerability and risk and discrimination and the impact that inequalities and discrimination will have on people that can increase our risk to develop poor mental health or mental illness.
I understand that. I also understand that some of them are really highly sensitive, and they express themselves through art, which is, I think, a very good thing. And art and mental health could be supportive of each other. I see many people also taking up creativity to release stress that affects their mental health. On the other side, I see professional artists who make a living or want to make a living from their art often experience this differently. They get burnout, depression. I see people in communities, they say, I'm going to give up. I'm going to give up because I'm going to hang my palette in the willow somewhere because this is not working. What would you advise artists who experience this type of stress that affects, in the end, their mental health? So instead of healing themselves with what they love to do and also being able to give that to other people, it's the opposite.
Yes, and I think I'm coming across, I'm having so many different conversations with people across so many different sectors and you know, lifestyles around burnout. And again, it's so important that we consider, you know, that definition of burnout and what it actually means, because we're in danger of, again, using terminology incorrectly and perhaps not appreciating burnout from what it is. So when we talk about burnout, we're talking about high expectations versus no control. Mm-hmm. So we see this a lot in workplaces where you have huge demands on individuals, on teams to deliver for outcomes, to, you know, to be very efficient, to constantly be focusing, and they don't have any control over their role or their, you know, what they bring, or creativity, or they're not autonomous in that space. So that's when you get burnout. You lose this sense of hope and, you know, in what you do. Nothing's going to change what I'm doing at the moment. So in the kind of, when we look at artists, we can also see that a lot of the time artists are working on their own. And a lot of their expectations are personal expectations around that, what they need to be doing and achieving, from financial expectations to, you know, raising their profiles, being seen by the community, etc. And so ultimately, if these things are perhaps not happening at whatever pace you, an artist is setting or is expecting, then they're going to feel less and less in control. Okay. We're also thinking about navigating through a world of funding, artists having to, you know, submit proposals and bids and, you know, working, you know, an opportunity that will create opportunities for them. And this is getting a lot more difficult. Okay. Yeah. And so that sense, loss of control, can certainly lead to somebody feeling, you know, symptoms of depression, experiencing that hopelessness, really, that sucks your motivation out, essentially, from doing anything, your inspiration and your creativity. And as an artist, if you're not creative, then what do you have? What do I have left?
Definitely.
If I don't have that creativity anymore. So that's that, we need to consider that. And so with what can we do? What can artists do? I think self-awareness is really important, because a lot of the times we go through life on automatic pilot and we're not recognizing those warning signs, those, you know, signs and symptoms that are telling us, really are sending us a message. Our body has a beautiful way of communicating with us, but we don't listen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, why am I having, you know, regular headaches, for example? Why am I feeling so tired? Why is my appetite changing so much? You know, what am I doing daily to look after myself? So that comes with an element of self-awareness, and you really need to engage in that reflective practice to recognize how our body is communicating with us, how our body is changing, and recognizing, okay, what's happening around me, around stress, around relationships, money, what is happening that's currently, you know, either feels difficult, feels out of control. And I think that's the first step. Unless we really kind of reflect on that, we're not going to be able to take that step, next step. Other things we need to think about as artists is, you know, get together with others, really connect. I think, you know, with technology is wonderful, and we wouldn't be able to meet, you and I, in this space if it wasn't for technology. But at the same time, what we're doing is we're not engaging in those kind of first face-to-face personal spaces where we're talking, where we're having conversations, where we're meeting new people. And that sense of connectedness can really help.
Yep. Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah.
That's something. That is something that the VAA, I'm part of, a member of the VAA, the Visual Artists Association, and they really create network sessions live. And so I'm setting them up here in the Netherlands. I have one in April, because we're all rowing in our own boat, in a way. And you have to meet. I saw here in the Netherlands, which I really love, what you just said. We couldn't meet if we didn't have the technique. But experiencing each other, to look each other in the eyes face to face, to have a cup of tea, to have a chat in real life. So here you have an organization which is organizing offline events. They do pop-ups. You don't bring your phone, not allowed. People read a book, people are knitting, people are playing a game, they have conversations with a stranger, someone plays the piano if